Today on Inside Utah Politics, it's a Republican redistricting redux. The GOP wants voters to have the final word after a years-long court battle to draw our congressional lines. And the state auditor and lawmakers at a loggerhead. Hear the story behind the increasingly public dispute over Capitol office space and the role of the auditor's office. Plus, the government shutdown enters week three. Why some lawmakers are trying to get the House back to work without a deal.
You're listening to Inside Utah Politics with Lindsay Ehrts.
Well, thanks for joining us. I am Lindsay Ehrts. Let's go inside Utah politics. The Utah Republican Party is launching a two-pronged effort to end the legal battle over redistricting. Now, this week, the Utah GOP filed two campaigns to ask the voters how to go about deciding the maps from here. Now, one would ask voters to approve or reject Map C via a referendum. Now, that's the congressional lines the legislature just put forward this month. Now, the other would ask voters whether lawmakers should overturn Proposition 4's anti-gerrymandering criteria entirely. Well, I'm joined today by Utah GOP Chair Rob Axon. Rob, thanks for being here.
Hey, good to be with you, Lindsay.
Boy, you're really keeping me employed this week.
There we go. It gives you the chance to ask the hard questions and start the conversation.
Lots to report on this week. Okay, so you filed two things. You filed a referendum and an initiative. Let's start with the initiative, because this is the real, everyone's like, what is an indirect initiative, right? So what you're doing is you're asking the legislature a question, essentially. Do you want voters to overturn Proposition 4? Talk to me about why you're doing that.
Yeah, so specifically, the question that we're asking, it starts first with the people. The initiative process, it starts with the people. And keep in mind,
but you're not initiating to the people, you're initiating to the legislature.
It begins to the people. You're starting with receiving the necessary number of signatures, which means you have to have a groundswell of support, broadly speaking, across the state of Utah. In fact, we have to get certain thresholds within 26 out of 29 Senate districts.
Yeah, but
it's across the state of Utah.
It's 75,000. It's not that many, right? Comparative. A referendum's like 140,000. It's double that amount, right? Initiatives
Correct.
Are double that amount.
So a ballot initiative is 8%. Legislative initiative is 4%. The reason that the 4% threshold is put into code is because you have that ratification going back to the people's elected representatives. Keep in mind, Lindsay, we are a constitutional republic. As a country and as a state, we've affirmed that. That's what we believe. That's the system of government that we have. So I don't think we should ever shy away from leaning into where you have people who are elected to represent you. So 100,000 signatures gathered to have 75,000 that are confirmed. That is representative. Electing your legislative member in your community, that is representative. That's representative democracy in work. It's a constitutional republic. The alternative of always assuming that going to the voters on every question, on every issue, that that's the only path and the preferred path, that's akin to a direct democracy. That will be to our detriment as a country if we go down that route. I don't want to see Utah in that space.
Right, but this is not a direct ask statewide every voter in Utah whether they support this idea of repealing Prop 4. Because the voters, even though it was 50.3%, and I know you're going to say that's not a mandate, but voters still approve this. Are any of our elected representatives any less elected because they only won 50.3% of the vote?
Which is why that's the law of the land as interpreted right now by this court and Judge Gibson. That's where it is. This is that tension that you have built into the legislative process and into any type of democracy, and including our constitutional republic. You want to have tension. When you have something that's been done in the past, it will be reinterpreted, or realities will change where law changes need to happen. We shouldn't be intimidated by the fact that we're posing the question again. This is the process that you look and you see, I liked something, I didn't like something. It's working the way we thought, or it's not working the way that we thought. And I think the confusion around redistricting, the conflict around redistricting, clearly shows that the people of Utah are not settled. And so we're engaging in that process.
What confusion is there?
Do you know what maps people are running for next year?
No, because we haven't picked a map.
Correct. That's the definition of confusion, because we had the maps according to the constitutional process. Our constitution is clear. There is only one group that has the authority to draft maps. That is our legislature, elected by all of us.
Right, and Prop 4 still gave them that ability. They could draw
under
the
duress.
Maps.
Under duress.
Okay, but still legally, they're not under duress.
We don't have
those
answers.
They're just following the letter of the law.
This is the point. The whole legal process has not fully expended itself. We are going through the appeal process. The U.S. Supreme Court at some point likely will have to weigh in on this. So you can't say that where there is question and differences of opinion, that it's settled. Now, we certainly understand that where it is now may say one thing, but that's the process here in the United States, and it's the process here in Utah. You take it through where it needs to go, and you have these hard conversations.
Okay, so you do not like direct democracy. You do not like asking voters as a whole, should we approve Prop 4? Now you're going to use an initiative to actually overturn Prop 4.
We're told we have to do that by the courts. The courts made that decision a year ago. Here in Utah, the Utah Supreme Court gave preference to any type of legislative action or amending the function of government if it started with the people.
They said you can't impair the reform.
Correct.
They said you can't impair the reform. You can still tweak it if there's a government interest to not overturn it.
To a degree. But my point is, if you want to remove specific language and specific expectations that were put into place through this process of signature gathering and initiative, we're now told by the Utah Supreme Court the only way to do that, to remove that, is through signature initiatives. So we are doing that very thing. We're complying with that very process.
Are you giving the plaintiffs here a taste of their own medicine?
Life is too short to be vindictive. It's not about being vindictive. It's about defending and promoting the things that you believe in. I believe that we are at our best when we adhere to the principles of being a republic. We are a constitutional republic. It served us well. Our state has benefited from that. And moving away from that is detrimental. I'm not trying to rub this in anybody's face. Certainly, it's not comfortable to go and do difficult things, to have difficult conversations. But you don't sit on the sidelines when you feel adamantly that something's going the wrong direction. And I feel a move towards a direct democracy is going adamantly in the wrong direction, and we need to adjust that.
Okay, so let's talk about the impact to voters here right now. The legislature has passed MAP C. You, as the party, endorsed MAP C. Now you're trying to repeal MAP C via a referendum, trying to get enough signatures. I guess the obvious question is why? Why did you endorse it if you're now trying to repeal it?
So two things. The initiative process that we've been talking about, that, of course, is on the question of the Prop 4 initiative from 2018.
Right.
So the initiative to repeal that. The referendum that you're talking about that we also filed yesterday, that is to take action in opposition to an action that was taken by the legislature. We have that right here in Utah. Code. So you have a process. That process happened last week when they took action. I want to be abundantly clear. They took action, like I said earlier, under duress. They were being forced to do this by the judge here in Utah, and they'll appeal that process. But in the meantime, they were doing their best to abide by the ruling that she had provided. So I commend them for that. They worked tirelessly. They came forward with 5 maps. There were a couple of other competing maps. But among the maps that the legislature considered, there was one option that was leaps and bounds better for the people of Utah collectively, in my opinion, than the rest. And so we weighed in, and the party weighed in to say and encourage that should be among these 5 options. That's the best option.
Did you know at that time when you endorsed MAP C that you were then going to repeal it?
No. This is a constant moving process.
Because it's only been two and a half weeks since you did that.
Yeah, if that. It's been a constantly moving process. And this actually begs back to what we talked about before of the confusion that has been put into this process that has left us not knowing what maps we have, what districts
really
we have.
It's not confusing. A judge said draw new lines. They drew new lines. And now you're confusing it.
Wrong.
You're throwing
I wholeheartedly disagree.
This referendum and the initiative.
Wholeheartedly disagree. The people of Utah.
Respectfully.
Absolutely respectfully.
Love you.
The people of Utah elected their elected officials. Those officials go through a very rigorous process to draft maps. It is their constitutional authority. In the Utah Constitution, it lays it out. They're the sole arbiter of that authority. 6 weeks ago. That's what we're talking about, a 6-week time frame triggered by a judge's ruling that has created confusion on that. So, yes, it has been a confusing time. And, yes, I am adding a component of questions and optionality to the discussions that are happening. But this idea that the confusion began yesterday is not accurate. The confusion began 6 weeks ago. And so we need to get to a solid settling point.
What do you tell your party members who stood behind you and endorsed MAP C, and now you're telling them to sign your referendum to repeal it?
Well, first off, anybody engaging in the process, whether they agree with me or disagree with me, I commend them. I think that's the whole point of representative government. We engage as citizens. We engage as the sovereign. We elect people. We promote ideas. So truly, to anybody, regardless of where they stand on this issue or any other issue, I'm glad they're involved in the process. And I'm thankful that they weighed in and they made sure that the map that when we had five options, the map that was the best option was the one that they, by and large, weighed in on, and it's what the legislature then adopted. That being said, we can say that that's the best among five options, while on the other hand, still saying the process should never have been the process that was forced upon the legislature. That's what we're doing with this referendum. It's not saying that that wasn't the best of the five options. It's not saying that the legislature did anything wrong. It's saying that this process is not the process that should have been had, and this is one of the only ways that we have to express that.
Did the legislative leadership know you were doing this? Did they support this idea?
No. So, in fact, earlier today, I met with a number of legislators who, for the first time, had the chance to ask
the leadership,
question.
But leadership, Senator Stewart, President Stuart Adams, yeah. Speaker Mike Schultz, they didn't know about this
plan?
Nope. You just did it on your own?
Well, I mean, 100%. Yeah. Like, I talked with a number of folks over the last couple of days, but this was not at the direction of anybody.
Because I was hearing rumors weeks ago about this plan.
Well, yeah, I've been talking about this plan with a number of folks and engaging with folks, but this was not in collaboration with the legislature or
not
at
to give
direction.
Them cover in any way to
if it gives them,
delay this map so it's not implemented for 2026?
If you want to term giving them cover by defending their constitutional rights and respecting the separation of powers within a constitutional republic, then yes, we're giving them cover. But this was not cover that they asked for. They've done the good job of representing their constituents and their citizens. I'm doing all that I can with a number of others. This isn't just me. This is a number of us that stepped forward and engaged in this process, and countless Utahns are supporting us. We're going to continue to make this fight because it's the right thing to do for Utah.
Thank you for letting me pick apart your plan.
Absolutely. Love it.
I love debating with you. Chair of the Utah Republican Party, Rob Axton, thanks for your time today.
Thanks, Lindsay.
Appreciate it. All right, coming up next on Inside Utah Politics, tensions are high on Capitol Hill. We dig into the beef between lawmakers and the state auditor. Office when we come back.
You're listening to Inside Utah Politics with Lindsay Ayertz.
Well, welcome back. Tensions between the state auditor and the Utah legislature are reaching a boiling point. Lawmakers have made several tweaks to the role and even the location of the auditor's office over the last 9 months. But we're now nearing a breaking point where legal action could be on the table. So I'm joined today by State Auditor Tina Cannon. Tina, welcome back to the show.
Well, thank you for the opportunity, Lindsay.
Okay, so when we say legal action could be on the table, you got to tell me where we're at in this process and kind of give viewers an update of what your main beef is with the legislature.
So if we remember back to the last day of session when the discussion came up over moving the state auditor's office out of the Capitol, at that point we rallied, the public pushed back, and there was a stop to that action. There was actually bipartisan effort to leave the state auditor's office in the rotunda where it has been for my 24 predecessors' time in office. That changed on September 15th with the convening of the Capital Preservation Board. The Capital Preservation Board made a motion in their meeting to follow the rule or follow the law. That is ignoring the full law, which stated that there would be a space study done, a meeting of the principal members of the legislature and the executive branch authorities, and then a substantially similar space found to replace the current auditor's office.
Okay, so during that meeting of the Capitol mm-hmm. Preservation Board, and the CPB is what it's called, and it
yes.
oversees all the space in the Capitol, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's
mm-hmm.
controlled by the Utah legislature.
It has a majority membership of the Utah legislature.
Yes, so members yes. of the legislature are on this committee, and mm-hmm. they were kind of accusing you of not wanting to follow the law because you're saying you don't want them to move your space.
Yeah, so, and there, I want them to follow the full law. So let's start with the Open Public Meetings Act, where the agenda item that it was noticed is clearly stating that this is a conversation about the state auditor's space. 2 hours before the meeting, we went down and requested what was on the agenda for that item, and we were refused. access to even what the agenda item was. If the state auditor, who it was about, can't get the agenda item, then I am certain that the public didn't know exactly what was happening that day on the agenda.
So what do you mean by the agenda item? What did it say and what was it supposed to say?
So it said museum.
Okay, explain that for viewers who have no idea what
Well, that's
means.
Exactly where it is confusing to anyone, because it's referencing a museum that's on the first floor of the Capitol.
Okay, so the agenda item said we're going to address the museum space. It didn't say we're going to address Tina Cannon's office and whether it goes to the museum space.
Right. Right.
Okay, so that's what you're saying is the issue here.
Yes. So it's not properly noticed. And then during that discussion, when I point out that the reason that I am not a member of the Capitol Preservation Board is because I am the oversight for the Capitol Preservation Board, and that we are currently in an audit of a project being done by the Capitol Preservation Board, that this doesn't look right to interfere in the midst of an audit. And move the state auditor.
There was some hubbub over that audit, too, in the meeting where people were like, we haven't heard about that audit. We don't know anything about that audit. Do they know about it now?
We do that audit every year. We are oversight over where every taxpayer dollar is spent in the state. So this is a current audit that we do every year. Of course, we would be looking at the largest building project in Utah state history. I wouldn't be doing my job right if I wasn't looking.
Okay, so you're taking issue with the fact that the legislature created a bill last session to move your office from where it is now in the rotunda area of the Capitol, and then they do this thing with the public meeting and the Capitol Preservation Board. So what happens now? What do you want out of this?
So I would like them to do it, if they're going to do this, that they should do it in public, in full view of what is happening, and they be open and transparent with what the intent is, why it's necessary, why they would be moving the state auditor. That's what I've asked through the whole thing. Part of it was a space study. I have pushed for that space study since the original conversation. Do the space study. We are there all year. We use the space, and to put part-time legislators into the space occupied by a statewide constitutionally elected officer just doesn't look right. And it just doesn't, I feel like it is a way to intimidate the office of the state auditor. You don't have to like me, you don't have to agree with me, but there is a certain respect to the position that I hold that should be afforded the office that I hold.
Okay, so is a lawsuit on the table?
We're hoping that they will do the right thing, but it is part of the process that can happen here. Yes.
What is the right thing? What do you want them to do?
I want them to have an open conversation with the public.
So you don't even care if you stay in your office space, or do you?
I would like them to leave me alone and leave the state auditor's office where it is now. That's what I would like to see happen. But if they are going to do something different, then I'm asking them to do it openly, in the sunshine, in full public view of why it's necessary, what the expenses are, and why they're necessary, and to have the discussion over why is it necessary.
What has your conversation been like with the legislative leadership throughout this process? Are they open to hearing your concerns? Are you guys just fighting? I mean, this is really a microcosm of the legislature and the executive branch literally butting heads here.
Yeah, this is a separation of powers issue where I have a constitutional authority, they have a constitutional authority. I would like them to respect mine the way I respect theirs. And conversations don't necessarily go well. They want to hear what they want to hear, and they don't like to listen to what my concerns are and why I feel like this is an important place for the state auditor. That the state capitol, by its nature and by its design, was designed to be your constitution in architecture. You are supposed to walk in and literally see government in the sunshine, the way the building is designed. It should reflect all of the constitutional officers, and that's the way it is currently designed and set up. I would like them to leave it that way. If they have something they feel like is more important than that, then I think it's an important public discussion to have, but do it in the open.
You have been the state auditor for less than a year now, elected in 2024, replaced longtime, decade-long John Dugal, who was in the position before you. Why do you believe they're targeting the office now?
You know, I think there are a lot of reasons why that it could be. There was a campaign promise by the Senate president that was giving that space to junior members whose offices were still in the Senate building. But I have also stood up and opposed My job is to point out the problems in government, and I have pointed those out. I opposed SB 37. I opposed, we have uncovered millions in money that was misappropriated and fraudulently spent. This is not a position you want if you are trying to make friends with the politically powerful. My job is to point out the problems. So I can say, maybe it was about one thing, but I've given them plenty of reasons to not like me personally, but this is about respect for the office that I hold.
You have like 10 seconds to answer this pretty broad question here, but do you think this is maybe a little bit silly to be fighting over office space with the
legislature? I think it is a complete waste of time. We do important work in the state auditor's office. It continues every day. I have a very busy schedule. This was not something I wanted on my schedule. It's not a fight I wanted, but it is a fight I've been given, and I cannot back down.
State Auditor Tina Cannon, thank you for your time today. I appreciate your insights.
Thank you.
All right. Well, coming up still on Inside Utah Politics, calls to get the House back to work grow louder in Washington, what they can get done while the shutdown drags on. Stay with us. Well, Governor Spencer Cox has nominated a new justice to the Utah Supreme Court. Judge John Nielsen got the nod this week. Nielsen has served Salt Lake, Tooele, and Summit counties in his career on the bench. He's also been on the 3rd District Court since last year, where he was also appointed by Cox. Nielsen even once served as the Assistant State Solicitor General. Now, it's this lengthy resume that Cox says makes the judge a shoo-in on the high court.
During our vetting process, Judge Nielsen's strengths in legal reasoning, clarity, and precision stood out immediately.
I have a deep respect for the court as an institution. I have appeared in front of that court many, many times over the course of my career and have always felt the weight of it. And boy, am I feeling the weight now.
Well, Nielsen will fill a vacancy left by Justice John Pierce, who plans to leave the court in December. He will need confirmation from the Senate, though, before he joins the high court. Well, election season is upon us. We're just over 2 weeks out from municipal elections in cities across the state. This is your official reminder to start checking your mailbox for your ballot. Counties started sending them out this past week. Now, since the Postal Service is self-funding, they are not impacted by the government shutdown. Nevertheless, could be good to mail your ballot back as soon as you can. Now, this is the first election under Utah's new ballot deadline. The clerk needs to have your ballot in hand by the close of polls on Election Day. Well, while the Senate continues voting on government funding, the House of Representatives has been out of session nearly 4 weeks. Democrats and even some Republicans are demanding the speaker call lawmakers back to D.C. Now, Washington correspondent Maddie Beertemple reports on the push for lawmakers to return to work, even as the government remains shut down.
Democrats are demanding House Speaker Mike Johnson swear in Arizona's Democratic Congresswoman-elect Adelita Grijalva.
What's holding it back? Is it the Epstein files?
Democrats accuse Johnson of not calling the House back into session and swearing in Grijalva to avoid an effort to force a vote on the Epstein files.
Let's be clear. Speaker Johnson knows that I will be the 218th signature on the discharge petition for the Epstein files.
Johnson pushed back.
We're for all of it coming out as soon as possible. That hasn't been scheduled because we haven't had that session yet.
The House hasn't been in session nearly 4 weeks after passing Republican spending bill September 19th. Republicans say the ball is now in the Senate's court, but some in the party do think the House should come back.
I have the House calendar right here. October 9th canceled, October 10th canceled. And then presumably this entire week is canceled.
California Republican Congressman Kevin Kiley says the House should be in D.C. holding oversight hearings, working on the farm bill, or trying to end the shutdown.
These are days in which we had important work to do.
And even if the Senate does pass Republicans' 7-week funding measure, there's now less time to work on appropriations bills.
And we've now burned 3 of the weeks that we could have actually been working on those.
Johnson blames Senate Democrats.
But we've got to get the lights turned back on, and Chuck Schumer and the Democrats need to vote to do that.
They have repeatedly rejected Republicans' bill over health care demands. In Washington, I'm Maddie Beertemple.
Well, that does it for today's Inside Utah Politics. Will you stay in touch with us, please, on social media? You can find me on X and Threads and Instagram. Just search for Lindsay on Air. Lindsay spelled with an A, of course. You can also find Inside Utah Politics in podcast form wherever you get your podcasts. And if you're looking for more national political coverage, check out our political power ranker. Our next, our national political director and the head of Emerson College polling look at who's up and who's down in the world of politics based on the data. We carry that for you on our free streaming app and a lot more IUP. It's called News for Utah Plus. You can download it now on Roku, Amazon Fire, and Apple TV. Well, that does it for today. Thank you for joining us. We will see you next week.